But let me introduce to you now Sharanjit Padam. He's the convener of the Climate Change Working Group of the Actuaries Institute and a member of the Climate Change Working Party of the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries, and he's a principal at Deloitte. He's acted as appointed actuary to four insurers and has more than 20 years' experience in the general insurance and accident compensation industries. And unsurprisingly, he's going to be speaking to you about climate change. Please welcome Sharanjit Padam.
So thank you. This is my first financial services forum. I normally turn up to the GI ones, and it's good to be here, and it's been very interesting for the last few days. So I am going to talk to you about climate risk and societal change. Hopefully I will be able to give a positive spin on some of these things. So what I'm seeking to do in terms of societal change, which is what was proposed to me to talk about, and I'm going to focus on the question, what will we do? Because as an actuary, I'm sort of thinking from an economic production point of view, how are we going to work, what are we going to do, how are we going to make money? And because I think from that flows questions like, answers to questions like where will we live, what will we want to protect for the insurers out there, and how will we live? I'm going to have a lot of, as you can see, I will have a lot of questions and very few answers in my presentation. Not because I'm trying to hide anything, but it's because I genuinely don't know the answers to these questions. Please do contact me afterwards if you have some ideas. It would be very helpful. I also want to start by just mentioning three things about Australia, which you may or may not be aware about. May we're aware of. So first of all, out of all the developed nations in the world, Australia is more exposed to natural disasters than anyone else. Second fact about Australia is Australia is more dependent on coal than any other developed nation in the world, both in terms of our economy and in terms of energy generation. Thirdly, out of all the developed nations in the world, our banking system is more reliant on home loans and residential lending than any other country in the world. So just three things to keep in your mind. Now, as I said, I'm taking an economic perspective because I rather like this quote from the chairman and CEO of AXA, where he said, climate risk for us is neither an ideological or theoretical issue. It is a core business issue, as we are already seeing the impact of increasing weather-related disaster risks. For those who were at my earlier concurrent session, yes, I'm sorry, I am using some of the same slides, but this is just think of this as a refresher. I guess that's my point of view. That I do. I am coming from this from an economic point of view. I'm not coming to this from a, I love plants and flowers and fishes and dolphins. I am talking about economic as in that, how it influences our society. Another financial perspective, Mark Carney, the Governor of the Bank of England and Chairman of the Financial Stability Board, said, the combination of the weight of scientific evidence and the dynamics of the financial system suggests that in the fullness of time, climate change will threaten financial resilience and longer-term prosperity. As an actuary, the last bit really gets me. So it is financial resilience and long-term prosperity, which we as actuaries, dare I say, should be experts on and should be responding to. So there's three categories of climate risk that I think we need to think about. These comes from the Bank of England's report last year. First of all, it's physical risks. These are the obvious damage to property from or disruption of trade from weather-related events like floods, storms, cyclones. And, you know, these could be insured or they could be not insured. So that's the first direct physical risks that come out of climate change. Second of all, we will see ourselves exposed to transition risks. As society develops and changes in ways that we will talk about, towards a low carbon economy, certain things will reduce in value. And due to things like policy responses, technology, and societal change. Lastly, liability risks are something that will increase. So we have liabilities arising because of people seeking compensation for climate change and damage to their property, legal actions against directors and trustees from failing to adapt or to mitigate against climate change. There are already legal cases like that. So the legal environment will change, I think. Here's a little bit more about transition risk, particularly from a policy point of view. These are figures from the International Energy Agency. So what they say is that if we want to have an 80% chance of staying below 2 degrees centigrade rise in temperatures, we can only burn 900 gigatons of carbon. Currently, we have assets that add up to 3,000 or nearly 3,000 gigatons of carbon dioxide. So roughly two-thirds of our assets, carbon assets, we will never be able to burn them if we want to stay below 2 degrees centigrade. If you are an investor or you're employed or you are involved in some shape or form with those industries, then this should be of concern to you. Just to give you an idea, if we carry on burning carbon at the rate we're burning, we will have blown that 900 gigatons by 2035 at current estimates. So we really haven't got that long to sort this out. Here's another transition risk. We have here arising from technology as an example. So on the left there you see the Tesla. And on the right, you see the Tesla. The one on the left is the car that is massively disrupting the oil industry because it's an electric vehicle. The one on the right is a battery, which you stick in your house, gets charged up by solar power during the day, which you use in the evening. That means you don't need to be connected to the grid anymore. So all those people who have been gold-plating poles and wires, you no longer have to pay for that. So we're going to see huge disruption to energy distribution and energy production in Australia and around the world. Just going to grab some water. So here we also have the impact on the coal mining industry. Just to let you know, give you a context of this, coal mining. Coal made up 15% of Australians' exports over the last 5 years. It employs altogether about either directly or indirectly 200,000 people. Question is, what are those people going to do if we don't have a coal industry anymore? Where are they going to live? And where are they going to live and what are they going to do? Big questions. Where will we live? A little bit more on that. This is a Professor Andy Pittman from UNSW, long-time professor of climate change, and he's developed a little bit of a dry sense of humour after many years. I believe he's also had life threats, his life threatened on a number of occasions for his comments about climate change. So he responds with things like, people build houses in the bush in Australia and they seem terrifically surprised when they burn down. Bushfires will get worse and we will need to think about the resilience measures and where we will live. But it's not just bushfires. Here's a couple of diagrams. The one on the right shows you the track of every tropical cyclone between 1970 and 2006. So as you can see, they're all... how does this work? Yeah, there you go. They're all pretty much around northern Queensland and northern Australia. So we understand that that's where our cyclone risk is. So we have building standards, if you're in this part of Australia, that make sure your house is protected from cyclones. Those building standards don't generally apply south of around about here. But one of the effects that we're going to see is if everything goes up by 2 degrees centigrade, you can imagine that these cyclones are going to come further down on this side. And round about here is the Gold Coast, which has no building standards for cyclones. And if you know if Sydney's temperatures are going to be more like Brisbane's and the Gold Coast, then those temperatures are going to be more like Mackay and up here, where all the cyclones have been happily going through for the last 30, 40 years. So We will need to think a lot about the buildings we have and whether they are ready for a post-climate change world. Some other examples. We're going to see sea level rises. It's going to threaten the values of home loan portfolios. 85% of Australian homes are within 50 kilometres of the sea. That's, I guess, another statistic I could talk about. We are more concentrated, our population is more concentrated along the sea line than any other country in the world, as far as I'm aware. And those properties will perhaps no longer be insurable, and it's not likely they'll sustain their values. And this is where you remember that the banks in Australia have more, I think it's about 60% of their assets are residential portfolios. And a majority of the other 40% are actually investments in mining companies. We are already seeing changes to viable regions for agricultural yields. We're seeing changes to where pests are distributed. The wine industry in Australia is having to relocate a lot of their places where they grow their wine already. We will also see direct health effects, increased tropical diseases, which will change our health needs and the insurance that we provide to people. Right now, in the northern Great Barrier Reef, 90% of the coral has died in Australia right now in what is the third global coral bleaching event due to increasing temperatures. Now, we recovered from the first and second bleaching events, but the signs aren't looking good for the third bleaching event. And if you've ever been to Queensland, you'll know how much the economy on that part of the world depends on the Great Barrier Reef. 90% of it is dead today. So hopefully I've started to show you here how climate change will have a huge impact on a number of our industries and sectors. Both directly in terms of agriculture, as I said, tourism, mining, energy, health, housing, but also then if people start to move around, we're going to have implications for infrastructure, where we build our homes, our roads, our ports and our cities, and where we employ people. There are some good stories here. It's possible that we'll see increase in demand for rare minerals to be used in solar powers. We will see greater demand for uranium, potentially. Some countries use the nuclear option to transition. And we'll also see perhaps Australia has actually also some of the best resources for clean energy in the world. We have some of the windiest coasts. We have obviously lots of sunshine. Those industries make up about 48% of economic activity in Australia. And they are potentially exposed directly to physical impacts of climate change. There will also, of course, be secondary impacts for things like financial services, which I'll talk about. Now, obviously, not all of those, that 48% is exposed, but in some cases, perhaps mining, the whole part might be exposed. And certainly tourism is one I'm very concerned about. Financial institutions. So general insurers will, you know, are expecting to see increased frequency and severity, and as I've talked about already, changes in location. Probably relatively small changes to average premiums, but massive increases for people who are actually in exposed areas, such as northern Australia. The main risk for general insurers actually is because they write annual contracts, they can walk away from many of these exposures. But you can't walk away from it all the time. And if majority of those risks become uninsurable, the top line of the industry will crash. I'll skip that one. So, and I've already talked about banks and residential lending, so I will skip that one. So it's all not gloom and doom. As I said, there are some opportunities out there. One quote from one analysis that was done by Bloomberg talks about $5 trillion in assets for the oil, gas, and coal companies out there, and that will need to be replaced at some point. So there's an opportunity out there for clean energy to the order of $5 trillion. And that demand is largely unmet at this point in time. We will have a lot of work to do in terms of retrofitting buildings, building levees, building seawalls, which, by the way, is the most expensive way to deal with climate change, since the cheapest way has been shown in many many different economic studies is to actually reduce our emissions, but we don't seem to have much hope of that happening fast enough at this point in time. So we need to be ready to deal with a world where we have to start thinking about moving substantial parts of our assets and how we're going to pay for that. The last thing I'd like to talk about is for us as an the opportunity for us as actuaries to make a difference in this area. People already expect us to have a good understanding for financial uncertainty, for long-term liabilities and assets. People expect us to be able to, certainly on the general insurance side, understand natural disasters, to understand health and all these implications. Whenever I have a conversation with people about climate change, they say, oh, it's great that you actuaries are onto that. There seems to be an expectation that we are doing stuff in this area. And I just kind of like to question that. Is it actually happening out there? Because I do think this is genuinely an opportunity for us as a profession to bring our skills to bear in a positive way and help society make the transitions that we will need to make in a post-climate change world. Thank you very much.